Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. It is my great pleasure to be joined today by Yasser Mufti, Vice President Strategy and Market Analysis at Saudi Aramco, who is co-author, along with Ahmad Karoita, of a chapter titled Saudi Aramco's Perspectives on Hydrogen, Opportunities and Challenges, that was published in the Oxford Institute Energy Forum in May 2021.
Hello, David. I'm delighted to be with you.
Fantastic. Well, look, why don't we start off kind of with Saudi Aramco's role in the energy transition? Because as a leader in energy transition in the Middle East, as we've seen in the endorsement of the circular carbon economy at the G20 in 2020, while, of course, under Saudi Arabia's presidency, and its investment in new technologies and business models in the sustainable use of hydrocarbon resources, you know, some say, of course, that hydrocarbons in any form should not be part of the zero carbon end game, you know. Perhaps you could share with our listeners your views.
Well, certainly, David. And I think it's a great topic for us to kick off our discussion today. At Saudi Aramco, we believe that global energy demand will continue to rise. We see the global economy doubling in size and around 2 billion additional energy consumers coming into this world over the next 2 to 3 decades. Now, the world faces a dual challenge of continuing to support economic prosperity by providing safe, affordable, and reliable energy for everyone while managing our footprint. So not only on the sustainability and emission management side, which are quite important, and we have an excellent proven track record in doing so, but also more holistically, what we do in terms of efficient processes, waste management, and so on. So our view is that all energy sources will help us address the climate challenge. And maybe it's good to remind ourselves that the Paris Agreement goals are contingent on ensuring sustainable development, on poverty eradication, and creating resilient communities and systems. At the same time, we in Saudi Aramco believe that hydrocarbons will have a key role in the energy mix for the foreseeable future. We have both the need and the importance, and it is clear to us that all available low-carbon technologies will be required to solve the climate challenge, and hydrocarbons will have a fundamental role to play here, as they have had for decades.
Okay, so we're here today specifically, of course, to talk about hydrogen, because, of course, hydrogen has gained significant traction and momentum in major economies around the world as perhaps the solution to achieving a low-emissions economy. You know, why do you think that is, Yasser?
So hydrogen, as anyone in the business will tell you, is already an established commodity. There's about 70 million tons of hydrogen produced annual, corresponding to roughly 4 million barrels a day of oil equivalent, in oil equivalent terms. And most of the hydrogen that the world produces and uses today are derived from hydrocarbon resources, particularly natural gas, crude oil, and coal. Now, within the industry, and particularly in Saudi Aramco, actually most hydrocarbon producing entities, we have been producing it and consuming it within our refineries, within our petrochemical plants, and other industrial facilities. It's actually an important product, as you know, in the process of making refined products and chemical products and so on. So the recent global momentum, the excitement, as we started the discussion with, is about commoditizing hydrogen. It's about having it as a standalone energy source. And the delivery point is not necessarily where it will be consumed. Now, furthermore, the excitement with hydrogen is, firstly, it's a low greenhouse gas source. When you combust hydrogen, you basically get water as the byproduct. There are multiple sources of supply, and with it, a rainbow of colors that have been associated with the source of supply. And hydrogen also has multiple uses in industry, power utilities, and transport. We believe that hydrogen offers a solution to the hardest to abate sectors, for example, buildings, transport, and is superior in that regard to other low emission technologies. The key point I'd like to make here, David, is that the time to act is now, and the technology and commitment are clearly aligned. What is not yet established is that hydrogen is still not a traded commodity, but we are keen on moving and progressing this supply to get it out to the market.
Yeah, so you know, I get the good points on hydrogen. You know, you've raised those very well, but can you share with our listeners perhaps the barriers to growth of hydrogen as a fuel?
Indeed, there are barriers to growth. We see three primarily. First is that a lot of investments are needed into the infrastructure to supply hydrogen. A lot of these investments are needed if we are to have a hydrogen market, a hydrogen economy of scale. Second is, given that the international traded market for hydrogen does not exist, we have lack of clarity on the offtake that can enable investments on both the supply and the demand side. We also need a bit more work to harmonize and have globally accepted hydrogen standards and regulations. And lastly, perhaps most importantly, we need a pricing regime for hydrogen that can enable the market to flourish. So I would like to emphasize here that producing a market-traded hydrogen is not cheap. Just to give you a sense of the scale, this is a multi-billion dollar business, and therefore we need long-term clarity. For this reason, we believe that policymakers in particular will need to be inclusive in their approaches. Policies cannot choose winners and losers. And we hear often about different colors of hydrogen, as I said earlier. And the reality, as you read in the paper, blue hydrogen, hydrogen made from gas, is actually today the most cost-competitive option. So if you want real scale success, we must focus on the solutions that hydrogen provides and not discriminate based on its sources. And this is actually a policy approach that leads to wise policy decisions. Now, having said that, the industry has already embarked on several initiatives to address those barriers to hydrogen growth. The Hydrogen Council, I would like to mention, of which we are a steering member, affords us interaction opportunities with over 100 members representing the full hydrogen supply chain. The Hydrogen Council aims to accelerate the development and deployment of hydrogen and enable publications and studies on hydrogen supply and demand.
Okay, you briefly mentioned infrastructure, Yasu. So can we perhaps talk about that for a minute? You know, why is Saudi Aramco targeting hydrogen? And why really would customers consider Saudi Aramco as a hydrogen supplier?
So hydrogen, we believe, is a strategic fit for Saudi Aramco. And we believe that for the following reasons. Firstly, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has an abundance of hydrocarbons as a natural resource. Hydrocarbons, with additional steps, are simply hydrogen and carbon. And we possess all the technical, technological, and processing expertise to get the hydrogen out. Secondly, Saudi Aramco has a storage capacity to store carbon, which is a byproduct of producing hydrogen from hydrocarbons. Thirdly, Saudi Aramco and our newly integrated assets of our strategic investment, SABIC, demonstrate decades of experience in the process of making hydrogen or converting hydrogen to ammonia, which actually captures carbon into itself. And finally, we have almost 90 years of experience with our customer base. We know the need and the demand of energy consumers in Asia, particularly Japan, India, China, Korea, and certainly the rest of the world.
Okay, now you mentioned in the paper, although hydrogen is not a new product or technology, the emerging business cases will be different from the traditional off-takers. Could you perhaps share with our listeners more on this particular topic?
Certainly, David. Well, hydrogen as a global traded commodity does not exist yet. At the moment, there are few, if any, offtake agreements between sellers and buyers, making visibility on prices out into the future challenging for both sides. And you can imagine the apprehension that a supplier would go through as they contemplate a multi-billion dollar investment to get hydrogen out to the market. And this really is one of the aspects that policymakers will have to address sooner rather than later to enable necessary investments to move ahead. Investments in the considerably sized business of hydrogen will require clarity of market dynamics and de-risking to the extent possible.
Okay, can we perhaps turn our conversation, Yasser, for a few minutes to talk about ammonia? Because in 2020, Saudi Aramco acquired a 70% interest in SABIC, and in September 2020 did a demonstration shipment of blue ammonia to Japan. So perhaps you could share with our listeners the learnings of that, and you know, are there plans to build on that one-off cargo?
Well, we were very excited with that whole experiment. It went very well, and we learned a great deal from it. So the experiment spanned the full supply chain, including the conversion of natural gas to hydrogen through a process called steam reforming, and then to ammonia, as well as the associated capture and utilization of CO2 emissions in methanol's production at a facility, at a SABIC facility called Ibn Sina. We also used the CO2 for enhanced oil recovery in Saudi Aramco's existing EOR plant in a field called Uthmani, a part of the giant Ghawar field. Both of these are located in the eastern province of Saudi Arabia. This demonstration reaffirmed our view that existing and mature technology solutions coupled with life cycle-based analysis can provide cost-effective and scalable routes to low greenhouse gas energy solutions. I'd like to further highlight from this experience that we, Saudi Aramco, do a lot on this front. Recent shipment has captivated a lot of attention, somewhat actually more than what we were expecting, especially from investors in our Q1 earnings call. And although it was really exciting to see Saudi Aramco and our blue ammonia shipment in the headlines, there's a lot more that we do on this front, which is simply leveraging our existing infrastructure and our know-how. And I'm hopeful that every year we'll have plenty of exciting announcements on this front.
And can I say on behalf of the market and certainly Oxford, we hope so too, Yasser. It would be good to hear kind of creative announcements as they come through. Our industry needs that. But why don't we talk to another area, of course, that's key to the energy transition, and that is the carbon capture utilization and storage. Can we talk about that for a minute? Because you know, your blue ammonia shipment used carbon capture and utilization in that the CO2 was used for enhanced oil recovery. Now some would argue that this is less effective than a long-term carbon storage. So perhaps you could share with our listeners, you know, your plans for developing carbon capture storage as well.
Well, David, let me answer that question slightly differently from the other questions. It'll be shorter than the other answers that I had, certainly shorter than your question. Look, we think that carbon capture is an excellent way to deal with CO2. And we think that both uses should be considered, both approaches, whether storage or utilization. We do not see it as a binary situation. We use both. Both have economic incentives, technical challenges, and so on and so forth. And I see room for both of them, not just for us, but for all players considering what to do with carbon in the process of getting or making blue hydrogen.
Okay, well, if I could build upon that question further, because in your paper, you specifically refer to the IEA estimates that meeting the SDS will require global CCU capacity to grow to 5.6 billion tonnes per year by 2050 from 40 million tonnes per year today, which is in annual capacity additions of almost 180 million tonnes per year up to 2050. Now, to me, that seems like an impossible target, you know. Do you think it's achievable and how?
Yes, David. At first glance, that number appears to be large. But allow me to remind you that the energy business is of scale. The world on a daily basis produces and consumes millions of barrels of oil. In fact, in a given year, there are some 35 billion barrels of oil that is produced, that is consumed, and that is transported. Our industry is used to handling very large quantities. Let's not forget that the players making up the energy system, including Saudi Aramco, have significant capacity to undertake such production and delivery of energy.
Well, yes, sir. You know, we're coming to the end of our podcast time. As always, we could spend the whole day chatting, which I'd really enjoy, but we just simply don't have the time. But I always like to end podcasts with a forward-looking question. So what is your vision for Saudi Aramco? Now, how will the company look, say, in 2050? Do you think it'll still be a hydrocarbon company?
I think this is a very interesting and a very good, profound question. David, we celebrated our 88th birthday this past month in May. In the 88 years of our life, Saudi Aramco pioneered the world of innovation and has adapted to change and uncertainty. I think that we will not only be around in 2050, but we are going to be a thriving company. We will continue to be producing energy. And yes, I think hydrocarbons will be a significant part of the energy mix and therefore our role in that. We will continue to be a big investor in the future, focusing on R&D that delivers technologies such as low carbon fuels, clean transport systems, stationary and mobile carbon management solutions, and non-fuel uses of hydrocarbons, what we call the mobility, the materials side of the business. And I'd like to close with one more thought on the company and our future. So we are blessed with a very talented workforce. 64% of our workforce is below 35 years old. So we are, despite our age, a very young company. It's also a diverse workforce that includes women, Saudis and expats, and so on. And that, in my opinion, is the essence of what enables the company to take on new challenges and not just be a thriving company in 2050, but a very successful one. We believe with that, we have what it takes to continue to supply energy to the world and much more.
Well, yes, sir. You know, thank you so much for your time. You know, I really enjoyed our conversation, but I have to say certainly builds on the chapter that you co-authored in the May 2021 OAS Energy Forum. I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.